The first comment I would have about lifestyle issues vis-a-vis IPF is really a reflection of the comorbidities involved in IPF being manageable points that we can address, and there are quite a few that have come up over the last several years that seem to bear some importance. Certainly, we've listed out smoking as one, and we can talk more about that. I'm eager to hear Charlie Strange's and Maria Padilla's opinion. But gastroesophageal reflux disease has received a great deal of attention, and growing area of literature involves obstructive sleep apnea and subsequent pulmonary hypertension, and obesity as a direct relationship are all modifiable elements that could greatly influence how these patients do over time. One of the first things I always mention to patients is that recent data indicates that somewhere on the order of two-thirds of patients will die from their pulmonary fibrosis, but that also means that one-third will die of their comorbidities. And so the comorbidities, we have a series of well-recognized therapies that we really should address. And then addressing them one by one, smoking cessation, I think, is always a good idea. And while there's some controversial data about smoking being protective in some literature in the turn of the century, that is in 2001, I suspect that is still a reflection of injury to the airway in some fashion, that patients would clearly benefit from stopping, and that we are probably superimposing multiple values on their pulmonary function tests that belay a different measure of severity than what we're accustomed to looking at.
Emory, I think the other part about smoking cessation is that many of the symptoms that bring our patients to our clinics are actually airway symptoms. They're cough, sputum production, that can be a source of lead time bias from cigarette smoking. So said another way, for the same degree of pulmonary fibrosis, those smokers will present at an earlier time, and therefore their survival will appear to be improved compared to a non-smoking population.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point.
I quite agree with you there, and certainly the other issues that we look at, including the weight loss and the best way for patients to do that, is participating in. First of all, I think that what we need to do is educate the patients about these comorbidities that we have listed and make them aware that there is something that may be part and parcel of their disease, but that they're very, very treatable. And that if we geared our efforts and attention to certain things like weight loss, participation in pulmonary rehab, and having an active lifestyle rather than the sedentary that sometimes comes from their limitations in breathing, is going to be important and conducive to this. Knowing that some of the medications that are empirically tried in pulmonary fibrosis may indeed increase their weight so that they have to modify their diet and be constantly aware of it so that they don't put on extra weight. It's difficult already for them to lose it, but to add more weight just adds more to their work of breathing.
I think another issue that is important, recognizing that somewhere between 50% and 80% of IPF patients have cigarette smoking in their background, is the possibility that they have both IPF and COPD. And COPD, as we all know, is a very treatable condition. So this combined disorder has received a lot of attention recently and may be more modifiable than IPF alone.
Yeah, I greatly concur with that. I mean, there's clearly greater evidence for a phenotype COPD and IPF coexisting that would both greatly influence our measure of their severity. And the second element I think would strongly advocate for the smoking cessation is what you pointed out, the very high smoking rates, and the assumption that there must be some kind of triggering mechanism to this, and certainly smoking would be one among them. Another, of course, would be the question of reflux, which also has a very high rate in these patients vis-a-vis the population at large.
So, Emory, how do you think reflux treatment makes a difference for these patients?
I certainly don't have strong evidence to say that it does, although we did present an abstract at ATS that demonstrated that those on proton pump inhibitors were protected from a greater reduction in DLCO from those that were not in cases with or without hiatal hernia, which was used as a surrogate for reflux. I think that there is a growing body of evidence that could be one of the triggering mechanisms that, while not solely responsible for the exercise, could be modified in an effort to slow the rate of progression.
I agree with you. And if we take extrapolate from some of the literature in lung transplantation, where some recipients who were waiting on the waiting list to receive a transplant had undergone procedures to limit their rate or the frequency of reflux, such as surgical intervention. And in that population, there appears to be a delay on the time to receiving the transplant because their disease has stabilized a little. So from these, we probably can extrapolate directing our efforts to treating reflux is very important in this population.
Maria, I want to thank you for bringing that back up. You brought something back to the forefront of my mind, which is weight loss coupled to an exercise program or rehab in these patients, which also is demonstrating a growing body of literature that has a clear demonstration of benefit, which is not surprising. We would anticipate that all of the lung diseases would benefit somewhat from rehab as the heart and the lungs work together. But I think this is a disease entity that's not gotten enough attention along that line because of the high mortality that people have perceived. But certainly in COPD, pulmonary rehab has the potential to improve quality of life and perhaps prolong life, and I'm suspicious that the same may be true in the pulmonary fibrosis population. When patients are in my clinic and ask me, you know, I'm debilitated, should I be resting on the couch? The answer is obviously the opposite. They should be exerting themselves as much as possible to their limits to create the best possible cardiovascular, pulmonary vascular relationship that they possibly can.
Yes.
And Maria, I have to note that of all the interventions that I have available to me in a new onset IPF patient, the one that gets initiated the least is pulmonary rehab. So I almost always have an intervention that I can pull out that will help my patient in that first clinic visit without having to go immediately to lung transplantation discussions and on the very first visit in the clinic. And that the biggest barrier there I found are the family members who tend to coddle the patients and hold them back because they don't like to see them dyspneic with exercise.
I think you're absolutely right. And there is more than just anecdotal evidence. I think that the more we look at rehab in our patients with pulmonary fibrosis, there is more clear-cut evidence of benefit. The six-minute walk gets improved, the isolation, the sense of dyspnea, all of these things are better. And patients always say that they feel much better after going through a rehab program and are eager to continue to maintain their exercise level after these. And I think what's important is that we prepare the patient and reassure them that if they require the oxygen, because they're six-minute indicated, so at the beginning that they will have everything that they need to continue their pulmonary rehab safely. And so those are issues that patients should know and being more acceptable of the pulmonary rehab.
I think that raises an important point about the reality that not all IPF is created equal either, and that these lifestyle changes can be very important, recognizing that some patients don't progress very rapidly but still have a deficit, and so their quality of their lives can be greatly improved by these very attainable measures.
I'm just reminded that in all of my advanced lung diseases that I see in my clinic every day, that I believe that my patients learn just as much from their cohorts in pulmonary rehab as they do from me. And so I'm always reminded that having the discussion there and in the pulmonary rehab unit with another individual with their similar disease is always a benefit, independent of the exercise component about that. No, they're not the only ones there in the world. And it's amazing to see the number of friendships struck up in pulmonary rehab that then last lifelong.
So there are many effective ways of helping patients change their lifestyle that will result in a better quality of life, if not, frank, prolongation of a good, active, functional life.